the Western Pennsylvania Conference of the United Methodist Church presents Meet in the Middle, a weekly podcast of the Western Pennsylvania Conference anti-racism team. Get ready to meet in the middle.
Hello, and welcome to Meet in the Middle, the space where we discuss a broad range of topics to the common good. This week, our team celebrates Black History Month. Black people are Americans, and Black history is American history. This country of ours is a tapestry of different nationalities, cultures, and skin colors. Together, we all represent the American experience. And so this week, we present to you the names, the experiences, the contributions these Black men and women have offered to American history. So let's get started. The practice of vaccinations was brought to America by a slave. Since the arrival of COVID nearly 2 years ago, I'm sure we're all grateful for the medical technology that has lessened the severity of its spread. Now, some appreciation should be given to the man who brought the life-saving practice of vaccination to the United States. Yes, in 1721, a smallpox epidemic struck the city of Boston, and much like COVID, it was a highly contagious virus and was killing hundreds of people during a time of lesser medical advancements. An enslaved man by the name of Onesimus changed everything. While the sickness was spreading, Onesimus confided in his owner about the practice of inoculations, which has been used in Africa for centuries. The information was shared with a Dr. Xavier Boylston, who, despite major pushback against the idea, managed to successfully inoculate 240 people.
Carter Woodson, a Harvard-educated historian, scholar, educator, and publisher, established Black History Week. His hope was that Black history would become so ingrained in American culture that Black History Month would be unnecessary. He began Negro History Week in February 1926. He had two objectives: to prove to white Americans that Black Americans had played a role in the creation of America and deserved to be created equally. Second, to increase the role of Black lives in history at a time when the media was portraying the Black community negatively. In 1976, President Gerald Ford made the first proclamation for Black History Month. Every president since then has proclaimed a new theme every year, except for the most previous. Black History Month was officially recognized in 1986. Still, there are no federal requirements for teaching Black history in school curriculums. This is Carter Woodson.
Dorothy Height was a Black woman, also known as the godmother of the women's movement. She used her background in education and social work to advance women's rights. She was a leader in the Young Women's Christian Association, the YWCA, and she was the president of the National Council of Negro Women, NCNW. For more than 40 years, she was among the few women present at the 1963 March on Washington, where Dr. King delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech.
Louis Lomax was the first Black television journalist in America. Born in segregated Georgia, Lomax first reported for the Afro-American and the Chicago Defender. He made history in 1958 when he became the first Black journalist on television. He became the first to have a TV interview with Malcolm X a year later. Malcolm X refused to sit down with anyone but Lomax. Lomax went on to write several books, lectured on college campuses, and covered issues like the Vietnam War, the Black Panthers, and the women's movement. He left behind a legacy of groundbreaking journalism.
William Wells Brown, a prominent abolitionist, lecturer, novelist, playwright, and historian in the United States, was the first Black man to publish a novel. He was also the first to have a play and a travel book published. He was born into slavery in November 1814. He grew up in St. Louis. He worked several jobs until he escaped to Ohio at 19 years old. Eventually, he settled down in Boston and met his wife, Elizabeth Spooner, in the summer of 1834. His first novel, entitled Clotel or The President's Daughter, a narrative of slave life in the United States, was published in London in the year 1853.
Oscar Michaud, a son of former slaves, went on to become the first Black man to produce a feature-length film, and his production company produced 44 movies. He featured Black lawyers and school teachers instead of the usual Black stereotypes in cinema of that era. And his films were some of the first to deal with racial inequities in America. Racism within the industry barred him from stepping foot in Hollywood, but he was finally honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1987.
Okay, friends, believe it or not, a Black man developed computing technology. Before the flat screens and high definition LCD monitors were the norm. Some of you may remember, I surely do. And PC displays were fastened to screens with no color and limited processing power. But that all changed thanks to a Black inventor and engineer, Mark Dean. Dean began working for IBM as a chief engineer in the early 1980s, making up a team of 12 who would develop the first IBM PC. In addition to helping create IBM's original machine in its early years with the company, he also worked to develop a color monitor that led the team that developed the first gigahertz processor. Built in 1999, it was a massive chip, but it allowed for higher processing rates and faster speeds within personal computers.
As the first Black commercial airline pilot, Captain David Harris didn't give up on his dream of flying, despite the difficulties he faced. The Ohio native joined the Air Force in 1958 and quickly rose to the rank of captain. In 1964, at a time when African Americans didn't fly through the friendly skies, Harris left the military to become a commercial pilot. After being turned down by several carriers, American Airlines said to Harris, "We don't care if you're Black, white, or chartreuse. We only want to know, can you fly the plane?" Harris went on to fulfill a 30-year career with the airline and became the first Black commercial pilot to be promoted to captain. He has a place of honor at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's Black Wings in Aviation exhibit.
Constant Baker Motley was a civil rights lawyer that went on to become the first Black woman to serve as a federal judge. Born September 14, 1921, Motley was the daughter of Caribbean immigrants' working class parents. She grew up close to Yale University and experienced many Jim Crow laws during her travels to a Tennessee college. But her mind was set on becoming a lawyer, even though she couldn't afford to attend law school. Until, while speaking at a community center, she impressed a philanthropist from New Haven, Connecticut. He paid for her education at Columbia Law School, and she graduated in 1946.
Entrepreneur and philanthropist Bridget Biddy Mason is one of the most beloved figures in Los Angeles. Born in Mississippi as a slave on August 15, 1818, Mason learned to develop skills in childcare and medicine. When her master moved his family and slaves to the free state of California in 1848, Mason was successfully able to sue for her and her family's freedom. As a free woman in Los Angeles, Mason worked as a midwife, delivering hundreds of babies. She became one of the first Black female landowners, as well as one of the wealthiest women in the city. Mason gave back to her community by establishing the first predominantly Black elementary school and the first African Methodist Episcopal Church in Los Angeles.
The 6,888th Battalion was an all-Black, all-female unit in the military that delivered mail to World War II troops across England. In February of 1945, this 6,888th Central Post Directory Battalion was established to deliver mail to American troops, government personnel, and volunteers abroad in England. At that time, many packages and letters were poorly addressed, and members of the service weren't getting their mail, which had a negative impact on morale. Officials estimated that it would take around 6 months to sort and deliver the backlog. In late 1944, this battalion was full of eager, well-trained recruits led by Major Charity Edna Adams. The Black women of the 6888 spent time in Oglethorpe, Georgia, preparing for service and became outstandingly efficient. They worked long shifts, 7 days a week, and created brand new tracking systems for the mail they received. Rather than accomplishing and sorting the mail in the projected 6 months, they blew through the task in 3 months.
Known as the father of Chicago, Jean Baptiste Pointe du Sable was the first non-Indigenous settler of Chi-Town. Around 1745, Pointe du Sable was born as a free man to an African slave mother and French mariner father in what is known now as Haiti. He was able to learn French, Spanish, English, and several Indian dialects while traveling with his father. After heading to North America and settling at the mouth of the Chicago River, Pointe du Sable was imprisoned by British troops during the Revolutionary War under the belief that he was a patriot spy. After being released, he built a trading post that became a vital resource for trade and supply in what is now known as Chicago. Pointe du Sable became a wealthy and well-respected trader in the Chicago area. Today, he is immortalized in a national landmark on the Chicago River, as well as having a bridge, harbor, high school, and museum named in his honor.
Charles Alfred Harrison Jr. is an unsung hero behind everyday household products and one of the first Black industrial designers. Born in 1931, Harrison overcame racially fueled hiring policies by becoming the first Black person to head and design departments of Sears and Roebuck's company. He designed household products such as the first plastic garbage can, sewing machines, televisions, radios, and kitchen appliances. Before his death in 2018, Harrison was the first Black person to be awarded a Lifetime Achievement National Design Award by Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum.
Mary Elizabeth Bowser is a Black spy who helped win the Civil War. Born a slave in the 1840s, Bowser was freed by her master's abolitionist daughter and went on to attend school in Philadelphia. During the Civil War, she became a servant in the Confederate White House, but was placed undercover by the Union. Bowser would eavesdrop on Confederate President Jefferson Davis while he discussed war strategies, and she used her photographic memory to memorize vital documents. Fearing her cover might have been blown, she attempted to burn the Confederate White House to the ground and fled. Though unsuccessful in burning the home, she is credited with directly contributing to the Union winning the Civil War.
Oscar Micchio, the son of former slaves, went on to become the first Black man to produce a feature-length film, and his production company produced 44 movies. He featured Black lawyers and school teachers instead of the usual Black stereotypes in cinema from that era. And his films were some of the first to deal with racial inequities in America. Racism within the industry barred him from stepping foot in Hollywood, but he was finally honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1987. Matthew Henson was a key member of the first successful expedition to the North Pole and made 7 separate voyages to the Arctic. On April 9th, 1909, Matthew Henson and Robert Perry arrived at the true North Pole. Now, Henson and Perry went on to explore the Arctic for another 2 decades. However, because this was the early 1900s, upon his return home from the North Pole, Perry was met with extensive praise while Henson was barely noticed. In 1912, Henson published a memoir entitled A Negro Explorer in the North Pole about his Arctic adventures, but he was still mostly forgotten. In 1937, he finally received long-deserved recognition when he was invited to join the New York Explorers Club. But it wasn't until 2000, after his death, that Henson was awarded the National Geographic Hubbard Medal. Black history is not one-dimensional. Through the years, people of all colors, all cultures, all nationalities, and all social statuses have helped to shape Black history. How many of you are familiar with the song Blackbird by the Beatles? I wasn't. And I wonder how many know that it was Paul McCartney's effort to speak out against racism. Paul McCartney was visiting America, and it said that he was sitting and resting when he heard a woman screaming. And when he looked up to see the woman being handcuffed and beaten, the first thought that came to his mind was that she had committed a terrible crime, only to find out that the crime was to sit in a non-Black section. Now, there was no segregation in England, and so he was absolutely shocked. And when Paul McCartney and the Beatles went back to home to England, his heart remained heavy about the unfairness of it all. With that and all that he saw happening in the news during the civil rights movement, he sat down and started writing. 2 women, Thelma Mothershed Ware and Elizabeth Eckford, members of the Little Rock Nine, inspired him to write one of his most memorable songs in England. Back there, girls were referred to as birds. And so the song started. Blackbirds singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. McCartney said, "So this was really a song from me to a Black woman, a woman experiencing these problems in the state." He said, "Let me encourage you to keep trying, to keep the faith. to know there is hope. Blackbird, singing in the dead of night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free.
Meet in the Middle is a production of the Western Pennsylvania Conference of the United Methodist Church. If you have comments or suggestions for future shows, email us at antiracism@wpaumc.org. Thanks for listening. To find out more about the Western Pennsylvania Conference, go to wpaumc.org.